welcome to Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? I'm Annie.
And I'm Dave. Each month we take it in turns to nominate a film, TV show or book we were a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers. Before we start this month's episode, we should do a content warning because the film we are discussing does have as a subject child abuse and sexual offences, so just be warned.
Okay. So following on from that, as Annie was saying, her choice for this episode was The Woodsman, which is a 2004 film in which Kevin Bacon plays a convicted child molester who must adjust to life after being released from prison. So, why this film?
Well, you said that we'd been doing too many light and quirky sort of fantasy type stuff and wanted to get back to something a bit more serious, and this was the most serious thing I could think of.
Okay, fair enough. I can absolutely understand that. So having rewatched the film for presumably the first time in a while, what were your thoughts overall?
Yeah, I think enjoyed is probably the wrong word to apply to this film, but I thought it was very good. I did have some issues with it, but yeah, it's very interesting. I think it raises a lot of difficult, challenging questions in a good way. I'm glad I revisited it. How about you? What did you think overall?
So I thought it was very thought-provoking. I was interested in the way that it, when I read on Wikipedia that it was derived from a stage play, that seems really obvious in the
yes.
way it's put together. And,
yeah, that does when
the,
you say
the way
that.
It's shot.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was quite a small, quiet film.
Oh,
in
very
which
much so.
Very little actually happens.
Almost nothing.
It's a very, I mean, not that I've watched very many art house films, but it feels like a sort of traditional arty house film in some ways.
I'm not sure I would agree with that, but
okay.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very small, very quiet story in a lot of ways. And yeah, very, very little happens, but in a very interesting way.
I thought the acting was excellent. I thought it was a really interesting choice for Kevin Bacon, which we'll get on to later. And more than anything, I thought it showed a very balanced view of a very complex subject matter.
Yeah.
Not coming down on one side or another, but
mm-hmm.
very much giving a rounded view of the whole thing. And
yeah.
I thought the writing for that was very good.
100% agree.
Yeah.
I was going to say, do you want to give a brief plot synopsis for anyone who hasn't seen it? But what you actually said at the beginning basically is the entire film.
Well, I've got a bit of plot synopsis
yeah,
if you don't mind.
Yeah,
so, Walter, I don't think he ever gets a last name.
I think he does, but I don't think I wrote it down. But anyway, yeah.
So, Walter...
Oh, you see his prison record, so his name is on screen a lot, but I don't
yeah.
think it's actually mentioned in the dialogue.
I want to remember to come back to his prison records later, because there's something from that that's interesting.
Okay.
So, Walter is released after 12 years in prison for offences related to child abuse. The film shows his interactions with his work colleagues, him getting a new girlfriend, and how she reacts to finding out the situation, how he interacts with the police officer who comes and visits him, which wouldn't be a police officer, it would be a parole officer. So that was
well, no, there's a different
odd.
Yeah, that wasn't like an official thing. That
oh.
was police harassment.
Oh, okay.
Very much so.
Oh, interesting. It also shows how he continues to interact with children and another child abuser that he recognises the actions of in the neighbourhood.
Yeah.
I also think it's not, you know, directly related to the synopsis, but I also think a major theme of the film is it really significantly highlights how much child abuse is just going on in general that is unnoticed and unmentioned.
Yeah,
and I think that
interesting
it
you saying that
raises that issue a lot.
I did have something to say about that from a negative point of view
okay.
in the writing of the film, but I think maybe what you've just said puts that in a very different light. But yes, we'll have to come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So we've already got two things to come back to.
Okay. Do you have some facts?
I have no facts.
I have some facts.
I do. I must say that I actually remember. I actually remember what I was doing at the time in my life, and even on the very day that I went to see this in the cinema.
Okay.
So I actually went to see this in the cinema in, I think, either late 2004 or early 2005. So yes, it is kind of cemented in my brain in a very at a very specific time and place, which I find quite interesting. But I didn't really remember that much about the film itself, but it is in my head as a as an event.
So we've
when I went to see it.
So we've been together 20 years, and it's 2025. So you must have seen this just before we met.
Yeah, a few months before we met, or maybe just after we met, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do some quick facts, if that's okay.
Please do.
So it's directed by somebody called Nicole Cassell, who I've forgotten to look up whether she's done anything else afterwards. That would be interesting, but unfortunately I haven't got that information to hand. But it was written by her and a chap called Stephen Fetcher. Stephen Fetcher wrote the original stage play. Cassell saw his play when she was a student director. And immediately went up to him and said, you know, when I have graduated and I can persuade someone to give us the money, I want to produce this film. And he's like, whatever. And then years later, she made it happen. So
with Kevin Bacon,
with
no
Kevin
less,
Bacon
and Kyra Sedgwick.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Amazing.
So it's produced by Kevin Bacon and a guy called Lee Daniels. Lee Daniels is best known for producing the Oscar-winning film Monsters Ball,
which I have never seen.
But I imagine getting Lee Daniels on board is how you get money and then get Kevin Bacon.
Probably.
Cassell interviewed numerous sex offenders and related therapists as part of bringing the play into the screenplay.
It does feel very well researched.
So in terms of people that are in it, Kevin Bacon has been in so many films, but hardly any of them you'll have heard of. I was looking, I was looking through his list of films, and I think I recognised about one in five.
Okay. Well, yeah, he is fairly ubiquitous in a good way.
He's done a lot of really not very good films.
He is usually pretty good value, though.
But he does work a lot. He does like three films a year.
Okay.
I mean, people obviously know him from...
Footloose.
I know him from Tremors, which is a fantastic film.
Oh, God.
Have you seen Tremors?
No, but I don't want to.
Oh, so good.
Oh, is that not like designed to totally freak me out
in
the worst possible way?
Possibly.
Uh-huh.
And the main other person in it really is his girlfriend, who's played by someone called Kyra Sedgwick.
And you've not heard of her?
No, I haven't.
I don't think I could name anything else that she's been in, but I'm very well aware of the name and the face and that she is a very well-respected actress.
So she won an Emmy in 1992 for a film called Miss Rose White, and then she was in a crime drama called The Closer from 2005 to 2012, which she won a Golden Globe and an Emmy. And then apparently she was a lot in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which neither of us have watched.
Okay,
she's been in lots of stuff. The actor who plays the police officer is good.
Yeah.
I want to say Mos Def, but I don't know if that's right.
Oh, yes, probably.
I should have looked
he
up.
He was definitely in it, and that makes sense.
I should have looked up other stuff he was in as well, but again, slightly failing. The other thing I really wanted to bring up is there's a character right at the end, a little girl who's about 10, maybe? I don't know how old the actress would be.
I think she's older than that.
But similar kind of age. And I thought she was absolutely great in this. And I went and looked up what she'd done since. And the answer is not much. Apart from being a really terrible looking all-female sketch comedy show on TV.
Well, that's a shame.
But I mean, but she's been in a few things. It's not anything that's been super popular.
Benjamin Bratt as well. I recognised him. The brother-in-law. Carlos.
Oh, yeah, I recognised him. I wouldn't know if I'd known where from.
I thought he was very good. He had an interesting part to play.
Yeah, he's not in it much, but he's very good.
He is quite impactful.
Yeah. Wikipedia tells us that the film made $4.7 million, but it doesn't tell us how much it cost to make.
Right.
But
I can't imagine it cost
a lot. I can't imagine it cost very much at all.
Yeah.
Because it's mostly filmed in the lumber mill where he works in his flat, and there's a few outside shots, but it's really not very much to it. It premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, where it was nominated for the Grand Jury Prize.
Oh, okay.
Metacritic, it's at 72%, and at Rotten Tomatoes, it's on 88%.
Wow.
There are two other things that I would like to say, one of which is referenced in the Wikipedia article, which is a film called The Hunt, which came out in 2012 and starred Mads Mikkelsen, which is about a teacher in a small town in somewhere in Scandinavia who is accused of child abuse and how basically the town completely turns on him.
Right, yeah, I've heard of that.
Until such time as he's essentially proven innocent and then everything just goes back to being normal.
Oh, okay.
And then at the end, it's like it never happened, apart from obviously he's really scarred by the thing.
Well, yeah.
Even though it's gone back to everyone just treating him the same, and it sounds really kind of horrible, but also interesting.
Mm.
But the other thing that I wanted to say is about the tone of the Wikipedia article itself.
How so?
Which I found quite interesting. There's a particular line in the Wikipedia article where a thing happens later on in the film, and the article says, Walter finally understands the pain that he has caused his victims, which then causes him to become a better person. And I'm like, I am not convinced by that.
I know what the moment that you're talking about, and that it is talking about. Yeah, it's an interesting one.
The article feels, I want to use the word upbeat,
okay,
which just, it's a strange tone for the article.
Mm.
I thought, as I've said, that one of the really interesting things about the film is it's very comprehensive and balanced. It shows neither a positive view nor an outright negative view of Walter. It shows him being an extremely complex person and character.
Does. That moment in the film does have an impact on him.
Oh, yeah.
And changes his behaviour in that moment,
In that moment, at least, yes.
And the suggestion may be that it does have an effect ongoing.
We don't have any evidence of that.
True. Okay, fair.
But, yeah, I just thought the tone of the article was a bit odd.
Sure. So, yeah, where do you want to start? Do you want to start with his prison record? Because that is pretty much the opening of the film.
That would be a slightly odd place to start, but we
can.
Okay,
I'd rather not.
No, we can do that. Better before I forget.
Okay.
I
thought it was interesting because it is a very slow opening of him just wandering about, intercut with
him wandering about coming out of prison.
Coming out of prison, yeah.
Yeah.
Intercut with people updating his prison record and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that what he did to get put in prison is not specifically identified until quite a way through. But there is a moment at the start where his prison record flashes up, and I had to pause it to read it on the prison record, but it is there.
What does it say?
What does it say? Do you know?
Because the thing with it is,
indecent assault is what it says.
Yes.
So, and sorry, I just wanted to say that I wasn't sure whether it was deliberate that it kind of led you into him as a character in the setup of the story before you find out what he did.
Oh, well,
but I
certainly
can't imagine there's very many people who would go and see this film without already knowing what it's about.
Yeah, but a lot of people have in their minds an idea of what people like that are like. And watching, because there's hardly any dialogue in the first 10 minutes of the film.
Yeah, it's very slow.
And just watching him, doing his, being in his flat and going to work and not really interacting with anybody might give you a view that's different from what you might imagine.
Absolutely.
Necessarily like. Yeah. The thing that I was going to pick up from that, well, I can't remember if Indecent Assault was actually written on the prison record, because I looked up the code.
Oh, okay. No, it is actually written. Someone's actually typing it in.
Because
it obviously doesn't specify that it was against 10 to 12 year old girls.
I mean, what I... it does if you look up the code.
Oh, okay. But, I mean, most people watching a film are not going to
look
up a code from
a
document.
I appreciate that. But not that I want to go into the details of things because it's too unpleasant, but it is interesting that he's been charged with indecent assault rather than rape.
Well, okay, we're going to get into this now, because what he specifically did to the girls is not described. And he says, and I know this is a major point, he says, it's I never hurt them.
Yes, that's obviously one of the prime quotes from the film.
Yeah, which is obviously a very much a justification in his head, but it's not made clear what he actually did.
There's a lot of stuff in the film where he... And the film's over quite... I mean, how long do you think the film's over?
A few months.
I would say like 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And there's quite a bit where he'll go into not... I was going to say self-justification, but that's not the right phrase. But, you know, some way of minimising the stuff that he's done. But then at other times he'll, you know, describe himself as being, you know, monstrous and stuff. So he is... He does... You know, how he feels about himself on different days, I think, is probably very realistic.
Oh, massively so. I mean, I would say that the central kind of tension and main focus in the film is on the conflict within himself, because he has these desires and he has these urges and he knows that they're wrong and he doesn't want to have them. But he also has this justification thread in his mind that it's not actually that terrible.
I mean, I would say that he only knows that they're wrong at certain times.
Mm. And because he has been told and he has been punished in prison for 12 years for it.
Mm.
So yes, because there's an awful lot, well, not an awful lot, but there is a strong thing to do with consent. And obviously, 10 to 12-year-old girls cannot consent.
Yes,
but he has this kind of tension in his mind about them agreeing to what he did.
So we're jumping, as we always do, jumping around quite a lot, but he meets this girl at the place he works, this lumber mill, and...
girl, I think, is the wrong word in this sense.
That was a...
Vicky.
Yes.
The forklift truck driver.
Yes. And they get together very quickly, in as much as she gives him a lift home and then says, and now we're going to have sex, like 5 minutes after they get into his house.
Yeah, she knows what she wants and she's not afraid to ask for it.
But the connection is actually to the previous thing, because there's some shots, I can't remember if it's before or after we see them having sex, of him having sex with other people.
No, well, there are two places that I can think of in the film where something is happening and you see from his point of view the person that he is interacting with very briefly flashing into someone else and then back again.
Mm.
And I think that's just... there is actually a difficulty I had sometimes in telling what was actually really happening and what was just in his head.
Well, absolutely.
And when they were having sex,
yes,
you're right, it did flash for a minute to her being a child.
Yeah.
And then flash back again.
Yeah.
But whether that suggests that he actually had sex with the children, I'm not sure whether it was just... intimating
projection.
What his desire for the person that he wanted to be physically interacting with was, rather than it being a suggestion. It wasn't a flashback. It was a thing in his head, like imagining her that way.
So the director doesn't make it easy for the audience
doesn't. There are several times where I really wasn't sure, because the timeline of it kind of cut back and forth a little bit, intercut different scenes with other things that happened either before or afterwards, and some of it was definitely him visualising things, and there are some parts of it that I'm still not sure whether they really happened or not.
Should we do, just to get it out of the way, should we do the really obvious is definitely not really real bit?
Which is what?
Which is the bits with the red ball.
Oh, there was only one bit with the red ball.
No, there's two.
Okay.
So, very near the start of the film. So, the new place that he's going to live is opposite a primary school, essentially.
And
he's looking out the window and looking at the kids.
He's told that he can't be within 300 yards of children.
Yeah.
And he measures it, and it's 320 yards from his flat.
Mm-hmm.
And he can see directly from his living room into the playground.
Yeah. So there's a bit near the start of the film where he's walking along the street and a very bright red ball rolls out of the playground and stops at his feet, and then he picks it up and it cuts away.
And I thought that was a flashback to him having then made contact with a child in the past.
I mean, I certainly didn't get that.
Or you think he was imagining that happening and what then might occur if he...
I mean, I don't really know...
...was forced into proximity with the child by giving the ball back?
So or? I thought it was... Well, I thought three things. First of all, I thought it was a very interesting use of colour because most of the film is really
very
muted.
Yeah,
very
muted.
Beige.
Yeah.
And then suddenly this bright red ball is on the screen. Have you seen The Red Balloon?
No.
So The Red Balloon is a very, very early cinema... art house film, which is kind of black and white, or certainly very, very washed out, apart from a little girl with a red balloon.
And then there's the red coat in Schindler's List.
Yeah,
as well.
it's an early example of filmmaking.
Okay.
And so it immediately made me think of that. But I assumed he would just picked up the ball, and then I didn't know why it cut away. But then later,
see, I don't remember the ball being in it again.
Really?
Yeah, tell me more.
Much, much later, like 80% of the way through, he's in his flat on his own, and he looks down and there's a red ball at his feet, and he looks up and there's a little girl standing in the doorway in his flat, and then she just turns her back on him and walks around a corner and it cuts away.
I missed that completely.
And that is...
I must have been writing my notes.
And that is not real. That's about 5 or 6 seconds of that in his flat.
Wow,
and
okay.
It's the only bit in the whole film that I can 100% say didn't happen.
Okay, interesting.
It was just really odd, because it's the only two places in the film where the red ball is in it.
Yeah, I missed the second one completely. I must have been writing my notes.
Yeah, it's
wow.
It's very bizarre.
Yeah, and then there's also the bit right near the end, because there's a subplot where he sees another man...
Mm.
Watching the boys.
Yeah, he calls him Candy because he gives candy to the boys.
And he eventually entices one of the boys into his car, and Walter has a kind of thing. He identifies that this guy is a predator and that he is planning on doing something terrible to some of the children.
And decides,
but he doesn't
not,
know what he, to do about
so
it.
He says he decides not to contact that his. Self reasoning for not contacting the police is who would believe me given my
yes
history.
Well, exactly, so that is one
which,
of the difficult aspects,
which is rubbish.
But then when he's actually out on the street when the car comes back and Candy lets the boy
not at the same time,
no well, later
another
on
time
a, another
when,
day.
When it's happened again,
yeah, he lets the boy out of the car and then Walter attacks Candy and beats him into a pulp. And while he is punching him, Candy turns into Walter.
Oh, I missed that.
There you go. So that was another one, like when he was having sex with Vicky and she turned into a child briefly.
Oh, I completely missed that.
Candy turned into Walter for a split second and then away again.
So
the suggestion is that he's attacking himself.
So there's an order of things which must be very confusing to the listeners.
Yes,
because
I think
we're
kind of
through stuff. But near the end of the film, in order to follow on from the fight scene, which I think is important, I'm going to have to explain something else. So there's a period of time near the end of the film where Walter, who's been getting a bus where he's seen a lot of children of this sort of age that he used to abuse.
See, it demonstrates quite clearly that even though he's technically not allowed within 300 yards of a child, it's impossible because he can't stop them getting on the bus.
Yeah. But what he starts doing is he starts getting off the bus and following this little girl that we find out is called Robin.
Yeah.
He just like watches where she goes the first time, and then the second time he goes up and says hi, and she's
bird
watching
by
herself. She's
bird watching in the forest.
And he has a conversation with her. And then the third time do you want to describe the third time?
Yeah, I can. They sit on a bench together, and it was the only false note for me in the film. It really, really jarred, because they're talking, and at one point she says, "The birds are my friends. They know I watch them, but they don't mind. They like being watched." and it really jarred with me because it was so unsubtle.
Yeah.
And no child would say that.
Yeah.
And the significance of that, obviously, to Walter is so huge and so specific.
Yeah.
And that's when he asks whether she would like to sit on his lap.
Yeah.
And what then transpires is that her father is abusing her because she says she doesn't want to.
Yeah.
And that her dad
makes
her sit on his lap and she doesn't like it.
Yeah.
And then she starts crying.
Mm-hmm.
And the suggestion is that Walter then sees the pain that is caused.
But when she's crying, she still says, "Would you like me to?"
Yeah, she says, "I will if you want me to."
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is absolutely horrifying.
Yeah.
And the suggestion is that it kind of brings him up short a bit because he sees the pain in her that is being caused.
Yeah. So that's what
by someone doing exactly what he does.
So that's the reference in the Wikipedia page that says, you know, he has this come to Jesus moment, for want of a better phrase.
So what?
But the importance of mentioning that in the timeline is it's directly after that.
Oh, when he sees Candy letting the boy out of the car and then attacks him and beats him to a pulp.
It's when he's on the way home from that happening. So the timeline is important. I wrote down in my notes, I see he is hitting himself when he's on the ground.
And it is specifically...
But I didn't actually see... him turn into himself. I thought it was just, you know, you had to work the metaphor out for yourself.
No.
The director laid it out for you. But, okay.
I mean, it is a split second, but it is definitely there.
But I got it anyway.
Oh, see, you're clever, you. The other thing that is a follow-on from that is the resolution of the subplot with the policeman, Sergeant Lucas.
So Sergeant Lucas has been coming round to his house and basically being...
Harassing him.
Yeah.
So it's not part of his parole at all.
Okay,
the first time he comes round, there's something has happened in the neighbourhood.
Hmm.
I can't remember what it was, but it was a girl had been attacked or something.
Which is interesting because that happens after Walter sees Candy. And so it was my assumption that Candy had done that.
No, because Candy likes boys.
And, well, this is the thing. And... it's never mentioned again.
No. But Sergeant Lucas comes round and he says, "Can I come in? I want to take a look around." And Walter says, "Do you..." No, Walter says, "No, I don't want you to come in here." And Sergeant Lucas says, "I can get a search warrant." To which Walter replies, if you could get a search warrant, you'd have one.
Yes.
But he comes in anyway because Walter is intimidated by the fact that the police are kind of there and he doesn't want to cause trouble.
He doesn't want to get into trouble. I don't think he's intimidated.
No, I think that you're right.
But I genuinely think he wants to just have as easy as life as possible.
And he doesn't have anything to hide at that point.
I don't think he ever has anything to hide in his flat.
Because there's the whole journal thing.
Oh, sorry.
We'll come back to that. Anyway,
Sergeant
Lucas starts just generally coming round to let him know that he is watching him, and he says, "Oh, you got off your bus at a different stop yesterday. Why was that?"
Yeah,
so
I don't know.
So it demonstrates that he's really paying attention to
what he's doing. I don't
know
how much he's following him around all the time.
And
it's quite weird.
I thought it was interesting because whilst, yes, what Sergeant Lucas is doing is wrong, because he is harassing him, and he's obviously watching him perhaps more closely than he should be, but there's also, you do get... from the things that Sergeant Lucas says, the sense of what it's like to be him doing the job that he does, working with, you know, cases to do with sex offences against children all the time.
I mean, he describes some really, really
horrific
things. I mean, he describes, I won't put it on the podcast, but he describes one particular thing that several police officers left the force after it happened.
Yes, exactly. It's really terrible. So you get the understanding of why, because he says, you know, a lot of the time that the point is made that sex offenders have a very high recidivism rate of reoffending and going back to prison, and he knows that as a policeman who works on these cases. But after they're let out, he can't do anything until it happens again, and then it's already too late and kids have been really hurt. So you can understand why he has the attitude he has, but you also get the presentation of Walter as a very complex, layered person who is battling against these instincts within himself that he doesn't know where they come from, and he doesn't want. He keeps asking his therapist, "When am I going to be normal?"
Which I, when that's a bit of a jump, but it, yes, but it is
it's a whole other thing. But
okay,
I wanted to finish the Sergeant Lucas thing. The day after Candy gets beaten to a pulp and ends up in prison with a broken jaw.
Well, he only ends up in prison because he's
not prison, in hospital with a broken jaw. Sorry. Yeah. Sergeant Lucas comes round again and says, "Oh, this happened in your neighbourhood. Do you know anything about it?" Because it's like directly outside his flat, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Walter just goes, "Oh, I don't know anything about it." And it makes it quite clear that Sergeant Lucas suspects quite heavily that it's him.
Well, he
and
says
that he's not going to pursue it.
He says, "We got a statement from a young boy
who was there,
which exactly matches you."
Yeah, true.
Do you have any statement about that? He's like, "Nope."
And it's interesting because the resolution of the subplot between Walter and Sergeant Lucas is that Sergeant Lucas then sees Walter as an ally.
I wouldn't
and
go
he's going
to
let him
far.
Off. He's not going to pursue him for the crime.
He's not going to pursue
him for that,
but that
he's,
doesn't
he's probably
change.
Not going to keep doing as much as he's doing to harass him. He's probably still going to watch him.
I didn't get that. Oh, well,
but it was just interesting
okay.
because
yeah.
much like we talk about a lot of good stories are about imagining people complexly.
Well, yeah.
And that is the whole of this film, mm-hmm. is basically differing attitudes and assumptions and levels within people and all of that kind of thing. Anyway, so that was the kind of culmination of that.
So you mentioned therapy. So we
yes.
do actually see him go to therapy.
So he has mandatory
a few times.
Therapy.
I thought there's no indication as to whether he had therapy in prison. And the issue with that, certainly in this country, and I don't know about in the States, is just the ratio of the number of people in prison who should have therapy is, I'm going to make a number up, so please don't write it and you know quote me, but probably like 3/4. And the number of like therapists for a prison of like 600 people is going to be like 2.
Yeah.
So it's very unlikely you're going to get any therapy while you're in prison. But he's obviously having some kind of mandatory therapy when he's come out.
As part of his parole.
Which is interesting because I used to work for the parole service in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And people, sex offenders who came out of prison, wouldn't get mandatory therapy because there were no therapists effectively on the NHS that were available.
Yeah.
There was nowhere to send them.
Yeah.
So, but one of the things the therapist does is ask him to write in a journal.
Yes.
And there's a weird...
Originally, Walter scoffs at that completely. I'm like, I'm basically going to be writing down evidence against myself.
Yeah.
And that is what happens.
Well, there's a weird bit in terms of the start of the filmmaking where there's an actual voiceover of him reading what's in the journal at one point. I think it's the
only... When he's writing in it.
Yeah,
yeah, several times that happens.
I think it's the only bit in the film where there's actually a voiceover, and it's a slightly interesting directorial choice to do that. But
yeah,
it's
difficult to do journal entries in any other way.
But I don't recall what was in the journal and why it would be so incriminating that at some point in the film, I can't remember when or why, but he takes the journal out from under the couch cushion where he's got it hidden and tears it all up.
Yeah, he tears it all up. And then...
But what triggers that, and what's in the journal that makes him want to do that? Because I don't remember what he's writing.
Well, I mean, the only bits that we actually hear him writing are about Candy, I think.
Oh, okay.
But I think the suggestion is that he writes about all sorts of other stuff as well.
Okay.
But yes, and even in actual fact, we need to come back to Vicky, obviously, but she's the one who disposes.
Yes, she finds
journal.
All the bits on the floor and then...
She goes looking for him for a particular reason and gets into his flat and finds all of the journal and then takes it away.
So, as we're talking about his therapist, he mentions relatively early in the film that he follows a girl somewhere. I think not robbing the girl at the end, but somebody else.
Oh, he talks about seeing the girl at the jewellery store.
So there's a really interesting bit where he goes to a mall and he's seen watching this girl who is... And there's a whole thing that I want to talk about later about this, but she obviously also knows he's there because she keeps looking over her shoulder at him. And he goes to his therapist and tells the therapist, and the therapist pictures it as, this is a really good thing.
This is massive progress,
because
A, you didn't do anything,
and
B, you immediately come
you
and told
me
about
it.
Yes. Absolutely.
So I thought that was I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. I have remembered why he rips up the journal.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a whole other subplot. So many subplots. There's more things happen in this film than I remembered.
Mm.
So he gets a job at the lumberyard when he comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And his employer obviously knows his background.
Yes.
But he doesn't tell anyone else.
Yes.
But the receptionist...
Secretary, whatever, yeah.
Mary Kay, the mm-hmm. secretary, yeah. Tries to... you know, be nice to him at lunch one day, and he
mm-hmm.
completely brushes her off because he's not interested in having a conversation.
He does that to everybody
for
the first quarter of the film. He
basically
won't talk to anybody.
But she gets offended, and when she then sees him...
And the only reason why Vicky gets to interact with him is because she drives him home and then jumps on him.
Yeah. But she does that because she sees him as different to the other men, because the other men harass her in the lumber mill, and he comes over and asks her if she's okay.
That's a good point, actually.
So that's why she kind of thinks that, you know,
mm-hmm.
he might be a good guy. But then
mm-hmm.
Mary Kay gets offended when she sees Walter and Vicky getting friendly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so she starts trying to find out what he did. And eventually she discovers it. And
I don't know how she finds that out. We know...
The sex offender registers are public information.
Yes, we see Vicky look him up on the sex offender
register. No, that's Mary Kay.
Is it?
Yes. Because Walter tells Vicky himself.
Yeah, but
it's Mary Kay who
But
looks
I thought
him up.
She then looked up the
no,
this
Mary
thing
Kay.
In order to... Oh, okay.
Mary Kay finds the information and then tells everybody.
It just feels like that's a strange thing you would go and look up, but still.
And he gets attacked at the lumber mill.
When you would just Google his name. Well, you know, I mean, it's 2004. I'm not sure you can Google very much at all. But anyway. Sorry.
Yes, so whilst the boss comes in and breaks up the fight and says, if anybody has a problem with this guy, you can just leave and not come back. It basically makes the situation at his job untenable, because then everybody knows and everybody
but
is going to be hostile towards him.
But he does
and that's
still...
when he goes home to his flat and rips up the journal.
But he does still carry on working there.
Does he, though?
I think so. I'm not sure. Since we're talking about him going to work, can we talk about Chekhov's circular saw?
Oh, God, the buzz saws. Oh, my God. I kept thinking every single time there was so many close-ups of people using buzz saws.
There was like,
and I was just like every time thinking someone was going to get a hand chopped off.
I mean, I counted at least 5 close-ups on the circular
saw. That really
saw.
Added to the tension to
and
me.
And I was I wrote down
expecting something absolutely
I kept
horrifying
writing
happen.
Down at some point. I'm just expecting something horrifying to happen. Is
and
what
it
I
never
wrote
did.
Down. And
but it's obviously a deliberate choice to have. You know, close-ups of people have using
I mean,
it. Oh.
You could argue that it's a bit of a naff way for the director to ratchet up the tension without having to put the other effort into it. There is an odd bit near the end.
It's quite amusing that there's some kind of buzzsaw going on in the background
while
we're talking about this.
There is an odd bit near the end where Walter is using the circular saw and he cuts a bit of wood. And then he takes off his glove, and then
he
lies
when
his glove
the
right next to the thing.
Back, yeah.
And my possibly wildly random thought was that was kind of an indication that he was thinking about maybe doing something horrible to himself.
I thought that too, but it was actually just him quitting in the middle of his shift, I think. He just walks out and doesn't come back.
Yeah, but I thought putting the glove next to the saw was a kind of indication that he was thinking maybe he would... do something very
mm-hmm.
horrible to himself.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a thing that I don't know.
And then 2 minutes later he's moving in with Vicky.
I mean, right at the end. Well, if we're going to do that, we should probably talk about Vicky in general.
We should.
So the most interesting two things for me about Vicky aren't about her, which is terrible, which is that in the first instance they get together and they're having a relationship for a while and she says, so what's your big dark secret?
Well, that happens when she drives him home the first time.
Okay.
She says, what's your big dark secret?
Yeah.
Don't you think I should know that before we sleep together?
Yeah. And he says, effectively, none of your business. And she goes, fine.
Okay, yeah.
And then doesn't, you know, make anything out of it at all. And then later on, he just tells her. And then she's obviously shocked and then packs up and then comes back and goes...
No, that's not what happens.
Isn't
she
it?
Is obviously shocked.
Yeah.
But she has previously said, I am difficult to shock. And then once she's kind of had a couple of minutes, she actually says, again, it's really hard to shock me. And she doesn't reject him. He rejects her. He throws her out.
Yes, that's a good point.
And I thought that was really interesting because she has an open mind about who he is and what progression he may have made. And he can't accept other people accepting him
so
because he doesn't think he deserves it.
At some point in the film, but I can't remember when it is, he says the thing that we mentioned earlier, which was, I never hurt them.
Yes.
Was a line. I can't remember if he says that to Vicky or says that to his
it's
therapist.
Yes, it's when he's telling her originally.
Okay.
There's another really interesting part of that conversation as
but
well.
But when he's throwing her out of the flat, he says, I molested a bunch of children. And he specifically says the word molested at that point.
Yes.
And that's a way to try and make her leave.
Yes.
And that worked really well.
Absolutely.
And then, so I've got these notes down of things that he said, but not whereabouts in the film they were, which is
also
not
particularly
useful.
Also during that conversation, the most interesting thing to me is that he says it was specifically girls aged 10 to 12.
Yeah.
And then he says, one time a 9-year-old told me she was 10.
And
one time
a 14-year-old told me she was 12.
Yes, and he seems really annoyed about it, that they tricked him into doing something that was outside his parameters. And I thought that was very realistic and really interesting that he was like, how dare they?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Talking about things that he was saying, he says, I never hurt them. And then when he's trying to get Vicky to leave, he says that he molested these girls. He also says at one point in time in the film, I'm not a monster.
Yes.
And I can't remember where he said that or who he said it to.
I think he was talking to Carlos, the brother-in-law.
Ah, okay. We will,
at that point.
We will talk about him in a bit as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But then...
Yeah, it's very complicated.
But then Vicky's on the... on the lookout, which is Vicky is looking out for him, not on the lookout.
Yes.
For him, which is two very different things.
Absolutely.
So
I find her very interesting.
So she, you know, finds the ripped up journal pages and is trying to make sure that he's okay. And as you say, at the end of the film, they're moving in together.
Yes. Yeah.
So we're, as always, jumping around a bit. But one of the reasons I thought the film was good was because there's an implication, because it's an American film, he's hit somebody, therefore he's a good person. But because he's beaten up Candy and is effectively beating up himself, and because he has this revelation when he's talking to Robin, and because he's moving in with his girlfriend, that he is in some way managing to process his issues and move on and become, quote-unquote, normal. But...
Yes and no. I mean, the therapist says right at the end, we've still got a long way to go.
True. But... all of this is still happening in the context where he follows Robin into the woods and asks her to sit in his lap.
Yes.
So he's not... There's not like a revelatory change.
Well, the suggestion in the Wikipedia article and in the film is that that happens after.
Yeah.
When he finds out that Robin is already being abused by her father.
So I think at the end that he's still an incredibly... complex character with lots of needs pulling him in different directions.
Absolutely. I mean,
it's
made very clear that, you know, these urges that he has are never going to go away.
I mean, the thing that I wrote here is at the end is he's still a danger to children and he knows it.
Yes.
And that's the ultimate takeaway of the film.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, when I said at the beginning the thing to come back to for me, when you said that there was a suggestion in the film of there being an awful lot more abuse going on than anybody really pays attention to or knows about, I thought that was a bit heavy-handed, because when they're having the conversation and he reveals that he molested... young girls, Vicky says that her brothers, three of her brothers...
Yeah. Oh, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah.
...molested her.
Yeah.
And then you've also got, he approaches Robin, and it turns out that she's already being abused by her father. And I'm like...
He says...
Isn't it a bit... I felt it was a bit heavy-handed that everybody was already...
He says...
And that's what has an impact on the interactions with him. But then maybe you're right, that it is meant to suggest that there's an awful lot more of it going on than perhaps we want to acknowledge.
So Vicky says she's got three brothers, and Walter says, which one abused you? And she said, all of them in chronological order.
Yeah.
And he says, I can't remember the exact line, but effectively, would you like me to go and beat them up?
No, he doesn't say that at all. He says something about you must hate them.
Oh, okay.
And she says, no, I love them. They're strong, gentle men with families of their own. And I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. But I don't know whether it diminishes her response to him because she feels as though, well, doesn't everybody do that kind of thing?
Oh, maybe. I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah, I only just thought of that now.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, don't know.
That is, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's a thing. Can we talk a little bit about his relationship with his sister?
Yes.
So his sister is, well, I'll take another first step backwards. Right at the start of the film, because we do everything in chronological order, right at the start of the film, we see him doing some stuff in prison and being released, and when he comes out of prison, nobody's there.
Yeah.
And I found that interesting on two fronts. Partly that, you know, his sister or his brother-in-law or whoever aren't there when he comes out. But also, the parents of his victims aren't there when he comes out.
Mm.
Which is certainly a thing that I would imagine happens in the real world.
Probably, yeah.
So I was quite surprised by that. In fact, we don't see any interaction between him and the parents of his victims.
No.
In the whole film, which
I think is probably
quite surprising. That's a good point. But they're probably told to stay away from him, I would imagine.
Well, yes, I would have thought so.
But so the only time we actually see his sister is right at the end of the film because he keeps having a beer with his brother-in-law.
His brother-in-law keeps turning up and being friendly towards him.
Yeah.
But it's clear that the sister doesn't want to have anything to do with him and he's not allowed to come round to their house or meet his niece who has been born since he was in prison.
And who is
she's just turned 12.
12, yeah. So we only see the sister at the end where she eventually agrees to meet him and we see the two of them at a distance and he tries to put his arm around her and she shrugs him off and leaves.
So it obviously doesn't go that well.
But there's a bit, I think, when he's with his therapist...
Mm.
When he's talking about his relationship between him and his sister when they were both very small.
Well, the therapist is asking about whether he ever abused his sister.
Well, that's the question. But it's very...
And he says that he liked smelling her hair.
It's very open and tenuous, but he notionally... But you see him smelling Vicky's hair later after they've had sex.
Okay.
And so... put those things together, there's an implication to me that he did abuse his sister and that is why
it felt like the therapist was pushing because he'd made that assumption and wasn't prepared to believe him and it was another suggestion that yet another person was making assumptions about him that weren't necessarily true and even the person who was meant to be helping him the most
that's a good point
had assumptions and biases that made him, you know, treat him badly, because I got the impression that it wasn't true, but that the therapist didn't believe him.
But it's really open.
It is difficult to tell. It's not categorically.
You can do it either way.
Yeah.
When the brother-in-law comes round and keeps being friendly, and then at one point, Walter asks him if he ever has
inappropriate thoughts
about
his
daughter.
Unsurprisingly,
he.
That was the
goes
point.
To punch him, but then doesn't.
Yeah, that was the point where I didn't even figure out whether that really happened or not.
Oh, really?
Yes, because I wasn't sure whether that was Walter imagining asking that question and what the response would be, and that it would be very easy for this nice, friendly relationship that he had with his brother-in-law to be destroyed because his brother-in-law would attack him.
Mm.
And I wasn't sure. And then the brother-in-law disappeared from that point right until the end.
Right until the end.
And I'd written down, maybe it did happen because now he's gone.
Mm.
And then the last thing you see is the brother-in-law having organised a meeting between you and his sister, which then made me think maybe it didn't happen. So that, again, wasn't clear. Because it was filmed in the similar way of the things that were definitely in his head.
Mm.
So it wasn't clear to me.
But I mean, the only things that I picked up that definitely weren't in his head were the two shots with the red ball. If there were other things that were only in his head, I didn't work
out. About the people turning into other people.
Oh, yeah. But I didn't spot most of those.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was also wasn't clear, and then there wasn't a through line between that having happened, potentially, Carlos then disappearing, and then suddenly him helping bring him and his sister back together. So, yeah, so there were some structural issues, shall we say.
Yeah.
So do you want to move on to diversity?
Yeah, I think we have covered all the bits.
Yeah. So there are three black characters and one Latino character.
Who's the third one? There's the
boss.
Oh, the boss. Oh,
Mary Kay and Sergeant Lucas.
Yes.
Bob, the boss. So they are all named. They all have lines. Mm-hmm. And they're a range because the boss obviously isn't massively keen at the start, but he does give him the job, and then mm-hmm. he protects his rights, and he says that if anybody has a problem with it, then they can leave. Mary Kay is, you know, initially wanting to be nice to him, but then she investigates and tells everybody what's going on. And Sergeant Lucas obviously has quite an arc himself. Mm-hmm. You can understand where he's coming from, but mm-hmm. he also does harass him. So there's a range. And then Carlos, the brother-in-law, is Latino as well. In terms of women, obviously you've got Vicky, complex layered character who's very important to it. You've got Mary Kay, who again you can kind of understand to a certain extent her motivations, but her action's not that great. And then you've got Robin, the little girl.
It doesn't pass the Bechdel test though, does it? Because the only time that Vicky and
Mary Kay are in the same place, they're talking about Walter.
And the whole film's really about mental health, so...
Yes, absolutely.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think that about wraps it up for this month's discussion. So it's time for the ratings. We use a standard 5-star rating system with half stars allowed. Dave, what is your rating for The Woodsman?
So I think I'm going to give it 4.
Ooh, okay.
Partly because I really like the fact that it was really slowly paced.
Mm.
Often I would go, get on with it. But it just felt like it was paced exactly right for what was going on.
Yes, I agree.
I thought that the acting performances, particularly Kevin Bacon, were absolutely excellent. Mm. I thought they
were... Yeah, because it's difficult, because he's a very kind of internal, understated guy.
Yeah, but he's also... I've got a note, actually. The holding everything in acting style is very interesting that I've got written somewhere.
He does it very well.
And also the character has... what feels like very different motivations going on in his head at different times. And of course, as I like to point out on the podcast, because films are always shot out of order,
you've got
to work out on any given scene what the headspace is. So I thought it was really good. How about yourself?
I'm gonna go 3.5. I thought it was very good. I'm glad I rewatched it. I'm glad we talked about it. And I agree with you on all counts, pretty much.
I was going to say, did you still love it? But did you love it in the first place?
Well, love is an odd word. I thought it was excellent. I remember thinking it was very good and very interesting, and not something like I'd seen any time before. Yes, and I felt that the same way this time around, like 20 years later. It's still something that stands out to me as very different and quite bold in its choices. So, what are we going to do next time?
So I thought, carrying on from this, we should continue the vein and do another really dark and...
And then you changed your mind?
And then I changed my mind completely.
Oh, gosh. I have other dark places to go if you want, but let's not do it all in a row.
If we want to do it alternate ones, that could be amusing. You could do
I have to do all the dark ones all the time? I have more to offer, should you wish it.
Okay, that would be great. No, I'm doing the 1995 television show Xena, Warrior Princess.
Oh, wow. No, I've never watched that. Wow. Okay, that is going to be a different choice. Yes. Excellent. No, look forward to that.
Okay, and that's it for this month's episode of We Still Love It Tomorrow. Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music, and thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you have any comments, or if you want to tell us about a time you shared some media you love and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can email us at willyoustilloveit@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
You can follow us on Blue Sky at still-love-it@bsky.social. And you can buy our merch at bit.ly/loveittomorrowpodcast where the spaces would be. And please join us next month to find out what Annie thinks of Xena, Warrior Princess.
And whether or not Dave still loves it after our discussion.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.